Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Karina, and you are tuned in to Adventures of the Mom Patriot Talk Show. We are airing live from Nature's Food Patch in the cafe, so we've got some nice background music going on. And we're going to be talking about tomorrow's March Against Monsanto and World Food Day Rally. It is the one that I'm helping to organize is in downtown St. Petersburg. We're going to be meeting at the City Hall at noon. That's 175 5th Street in St. Petersburg, Florida. I want to give a shout-out to Nature's Food Patch because they have generously donated 12 cases of water and a whole bunch of Frisbees and a lot of educational brochures about GMOs. What Nature's Food Patch has done is they're a local grocer, and they've made a commitment to the community to offer non-GMO foods and to do research on them to make sure that their customers are empowered and that they have good food options and so that they'll know what is in their food for their family. I'm really excited about the March Against Monsanto rally. We've got all kinds of special fun things that Amanda and Amy and the organizers have put together. There's going to be a few skits. There's also going to be a candidate town hall forum. And Lisa, I know you're on mute, but I might need to bounce some things off of you if you don't mind getting off mute.
No problem. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Excellent.
I'm really, really excited. We actually just found out yesterday, this has nothing to do with the rally, but we just found out yesterday that our congressman in District 13, who's been in D.C. for 43 years, he's decided, after announcing that he was going to run again a couple of months ago, he's decided not to run. So at this moment, we have a two-way race going on between Lucas Overby, he's the Libertarian candidate, and Jessica Ehrlich, who is the Democrat candidate, and she ran last year. And we've got a commitment from Lucas Overby to be at the town hall forum, and basically what they're going to get is a few minutes to speak each, and then we're going to be collecting questions from the marchers to see what they would like to ask their candidates about GMO foods and their views on all the federal issues that we're having to deal with as well. So I'm really excited about that.
I'm going to get on the call. So,
okay,
Karina, I have been reading some interesting stuff as of late. I know some of our listeners might be familiar with a concept called wheat belly, about how wheat itself, as it's been manufactured in the last 30, 40 years itself, does not resemble in any way the wheat that people were familiar with just a couple generations ago. So I thought maybe while we're waiting for our caller to call in that we could talk about how Monsanto has actually impacted the process of what they call Franken-wheat.
Have you heard
that expression, Franken-wheat? Isn't that crazy?
No.
But it's just the idea that wheat has changed. It used to be a very healthy, natural, whole ingredient, but the according to Dr. William Davis, who actually wrote the Wheat Belly Diet and the Wheat Belly Cookbook, I'm reading from the Wheat Belly Cookbook here, wheat has long been a problematic food for many people because it's, there's a connection with celiac disease and intestinal damage from wheat gluten and that kind of thing. Now, that has been going on for a while. There are people who have been wheat sensitive for a very long time, and there are documented cases going back to, according to him, as long ago as, AD 100. But modern changes by geneticists have only made it much worse. So essentially, there are a couple changes that there is something called a semi-dwarf plant. It has a shorter stalk, and it diverts less fertilizer and nutrients from the seed. This, the change in just the height of the old traditional wheat from this new dwarf wheat, which, by the way, is everywhere, makes it so that the wheat can grow in many more places, and there's huge crop yield. But the actual dwarf wheat, they thought it early on, was going to be equal or certainly nutritionally compatible or similar to the actual wheat of old, but it just is not proven to be that way. The seed head is larger, the seeds are bigger, and they have a different shape. And that variation means that semi-dwarf wheat, which is the stuff that's being produced everywhere, tends to have reduced protein content and higher carbohydrate content, and it also yields different characteristics in baking and things like that. But it's not just a difference in outward appearance. There's something called gliadin now as a component in modern wheat. It's a protein, and it is in the dwarf wheat, and it actually has an addictive quality that makes it in the brain similar to an opiate. So anyway, the upshot of that is they messed around with the wheat. They thought they found a great comparable wheat that yielded a lot of crops, certainly was going to feed the world, but it ends up that it's not only in appearance different, but it's genetically different enough that there are certain facets about it, like the gliadin protein, that make it addictive. Now, here's the part that disturbs me. Big Food has known about this. Big Food has been lobbying to keep this wheat with its addictive quality in the market, and Big Food has been paying lobbyists millions of dollars a year to put wheat products that are now addictive to us in everything. There's no box food you can find that doesn't have some kind of derivation of wheat in it because of its addictive qualities, is what Dr. William Davis suggests. That it's been, you know, initially it was an accident, but recently it's been very purposeful. Once they found out it had an addictive nature, they put it in everything. So then, of course, you'd buy more food. And his research has uncovered that people who eat wheat tend to consume 440 more calories on average than regular people, because this driving hunger, this addictive quality within this wheat protein is driving us to eat more, to the tune of 440 more calories a day, which is just hugely significant. So anyway, I'm sure at one point what we can talk about is how the industry has influenced our actual health directly, or impacted our poor health directly, because, of course, a consumption of carbs is directly leading to a huge epidemic of diabetes and things like that. So what do you think about that? Is that having conversation about?
Yeah, well, and on the other hand, I know growing up, my middle brother, who's now a doctor, he had to go in when he was a kid for allergy testing, and he was allergic to corn and wheat, and I cannot even begin to tell you. And this was, about 30-something years ago, the insanity that my mom had to go through in the store, because if it doesn't have wheat products, it has corn products in it. And Nature's Food Patch is going to be offering a movie tonight called King Corn, and it's about how they're putting corn in everything. So it's just an overall corporation, you know, corporate cronyism kind of stuff. And then they'll go, what we're marching against tomorrow is to try and get the power of our food back from the corporations, because they've got powerful lobbyists, and they also have what's called the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is going to be craziness, because it's going to just totally take away our national sovereignty when it comes to our food. But yeah, if you want to go through some of that, I know that you're a perfect example, because the last time I saw you, I told you to stop losing weight because I was going to be the fat friend.
Well,
oh, I don't want to be the fat friend. You got to stop that.
Well, it's just, you know, so
because the weight has dropped off of you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It has, and it's really been no effort on my part. Lord knows I do not exercise the way I need to. There's just, you know, I'm time challenged just like everybody is, and that's a struggle I'm sure many of us have. But just in eliminating wheat and corn flours from my diet, and, you know, by extension, of course, I just don't eat corn as a vegetable, but I mainly avoid corn because of the GMO issue. But anyway, but just taking this stuff out of my diet has significantly helped, not just dropping weight. And that's something that Dr. Davis suggests is also helped by just eliminating unnecessary carbs. I mean, I do stay away from sugar and things like that, so that has helped too. But what it's the most radical change that I thought I was just going to have to live with are things like joint pain and sinus congestion. I thought I just had been in too many car wrecks and my joints were going to be a mess for the rest of my life. And when you're in your mid-40s, you know, you hear all the stories, well, your body's going to start breaking down, you're going to start feeling aches and pains. So I took it in stride that that's what I was feeling. And after a couple bad car wrecks, I thought, surely this is just my life now. I'm going to have to take Advil every day or two to muddle through. I'm going to have to, you know, continually stretch and work on it. And at the same time, I'm just going to have to endure. And then, of course, I've had allergies my whole life, so sinus pressure and pain is no, I'm no stranger to that. It never occurred to me that those things were in any way impacted by my diet until I stopped eating wheat and those kind of flours, and it went away, absolutely went away. So that was a shocker to me. That was really the surprise.
It affects your energy level, too, because if you're not in pain and And by the way, that sounded really bad when I was saying you weren't fat before. That sounded really bad. So
I was just joking around
because
I understand. I was like so many people who had just, you know, gotten into the sedentary lifestyle, sitting behind a computer, and just started packing on the pounds as I got a little older. Every year that went by, I was a few pounds heavier, and pretty soon, significantly heavier than I really need to be. And, so I do have significant weight to lose. However, I was still very healthy, and I still had some energy, and I still felt like I could start working out if I needed to, and I craved that. So it was, you know, I wasn't a picture of miserable poor health. What I was stunned with is just that change, how it took me from being mediocre in health to feeling fabulous, great. And I, you know, things that I thought were going to be a problem my whole life were just not a problem. Or another symptom that I was having that I didn't realize could be caused by big food lobbying into, you know, and all this unhealthy food stuff we're given. I had terrible edema. You know, my feet would swell if I'd been on my feet or if my knees hung off a chair for several hours. Now, true. Everybody needs to just kind of move, and nobody needs to be sitting in a chair with their legs dangling for 3 hours at a stretch. That's probably not advisable. But the kind of swelling I was having as a result of that was fairly new to me. I'd not experienced that kind of edema when I was younger. Now, all of a sudden, I thought, I'm getting older. These things happen. Never occurred to me that kind of edema and swelling, and because that's what it is, it's all inflammation, sinus pressure, sinus headaches, joints, swelling, joint pain, muscle cramps, you know, that kind of thing. It's inflammation. So if you take away the inflammation, those symptoms disappear, and same with the edema.
Isn't there, like, doesn't it cause problems with estrogen levels too, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, because if you're retaining water and swelling, it's going to throw your whole endocrine system out of whack. Another thing that's been linked to this kind of inflammation is Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, you know, I it's hard to say we're seeing an epidemic of something because you don't know if something is just being reported more often or if it's actually occurring more often. But if there's a possibility that we're hearing more and more about Alzheimer's or people who have Alzheimer's symptoms but don't have Alzheimer's, I'm hearing that a lot now, too. I'm sure our listeners are as well. The fact that that could be linked potentially to a lifetime of eating habits that produce these kinds of symptoms and swelling that somehow impacts you on a permanent level, or maybe not permanent, maybe just impacts you for a time, but people assume it's permanent because if somebody is 80 years old and they're starting to experience some of these symptoms, well, you know, it's just old timers. Well, what if it's not? What if it's something that could be reversed with diet? Should we be trying it? Another symptom that is very serious that's been linked to this kind of inflammation is asthma. There are people who, following the wheat belly diet, have been able to go off their inhalers completely. And for any mom who has had to, you know, take their child to the doctor, like I have for asthma attacks and things, and my son, at the, you know, he did not, strictly speaking, have asthma, but he would have very similar asthmatic symptoms that would, you know, we would go to the doctor would give him the breath thing in the office, and the symptoms would clear up, and they'd send us home. It wasn't severe enough for him to get an asthma diagnosis, but it happened a handful of times, and when you're a young mom, that is incredibly nerve-wracking, because now you start wondering, is my child going to be able to function in sports? Is my child going to be able to be active? Is something going to happen on the playground or on the ball field, and he's going to not be able to breathe and get oxygen, and you know, I know there are people who have a kid like one of mine who is very sensitive to whenever they get short of breath, they're prone to passing out. You know, it's happened a dozen times in his life, and I've heard stories of other kids who are just, that happens to them. They're just, it's not, you know, the littlest thing happens that takes away their breath, and they're flat out on the floor. And I've been in the situations where I've been in church and I've had to, you know, the children's workers have had to come get me out of church because my son had passed out in the gym. So this is nerve-wracking. And if there is a way that we can behaviorally change something and change our buying habits, our eating habits to adapt and adjust to the fact that big food has taken over the food industry in the way they have, I think, you know, as parents, we probably are very inclined to give it a go. So what I'm looking for right now is the actual data that he shared about big food and their impact. But anyway, I just didn't know if that was something that you wanted to get into today. I'd be happy to go on and on because, girl, I have opinions about all of this because of what I've experienced just in the last few months on it. But does any of this tie to the march? I mean, is this sort of what our voices, which we want our voices to be heard, is this the kind of thing that we need to be talking about more, in your opinion?
Well, you know, healthy eating and organic, and I do want to touch base, especially on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because it's going to create a super deal, which is going to threaten the sovereignty of 12 different nations involved, by giving away their power to large corporations like Monsanto and Goldman Sachs and Pfizer and Halliburton and Philip Morris and GM and GE, just to name a few. I just want to review that pretty quick because we're going to be handing out educational material on this and encouraging the marchers to contact their senators and their representatives in D.C. And since we're going to have a couple of potential, well, you know, somebody that's potentially going to represent our district in the U.S. House. I just want to review the TPP because a lot of people haven't heard about it, mainly because it's going through right on fast track trade promotion authority. So what's happening is the White House is basically trying to fast track it and get it through without Congress actually reviewing it. And we know how well they read legislation or even partnership agreements. So I'm just going to go through the bullet points real quick. The TPP would offshore millions of good-paying jobs, increasing unemployment. It would decrease access to affordable medications. And I'm going to put all these websites up on our page, the Adventures of a Mom Patriot Talk Show on Facebook. It's going to destroy the consumer's right to know what's in your food by repealing any proposed GMO labeling. Now, the way it's going to do that is it's going to empower corporations to actually sue national government through a special three-judge panel. It won't even go through our court system. And so, I mean, it's just insane. It's going to they'll be able to import foods that don't meet U.S. safety standards. It's going to impose gag laws like SOPA and CISPA for internet communication, restricting our rights to free speech. And then here it says it's going to roll back Wall Street regulations and prohibit bans on risky financial services. That really doesn't have much to do with what's happening, what we're going to be talking about, right, you know, at the march. But this is just how bad it is. And some of what Monsanto, the March Against Monsanto, the national group, wants us to get past, you know, the solutions that we're advocating is voting with your dollar by buying organic and boycotting Monsanto-owned companies that use GMO in their products. Excuse me. Labeling of GMOs so that the consumers can make informed decisions easier. Repealing relevant provisions of the U.S. Monsanto Protection Act. And I believe that just went through the Senate, but, you know, they can always sneak it into another bill. Calling for further scientific research on the health effects of GMOs. And they basically want people to do what you and I have been advocating for over a year now, is to get out and talk to your neighbors about it, because food is important to everybody. I mean, I don't really know. Do you know anybody that doesn't eat?
No, and I don't know anybody who doesn't like to eat, actually.
Right. So that's basically what they're going to be doing. And like I said, I'm really excited about the town hall, and they've set up a flash mob dance. They've been practicing for the last couple of weeks, and they're going to have a skit. It's just going to be really great. The organizers that are a lot more artistic than me have just put together a great team of people and performers, and they're going to have the drummers that will be marching with us. So it's going to be very exciting, and the Libertarian Party of Pinellas County is going to be there with their tent, and we're going to be offering a lot of this information for people to get engaged with their community when they leave the march. So I believe that's what I have for today about that. Once again, the march is tomorrow. It's October 12th at noon, and St. Petersburg is going to be at City Hall, and we're going to march around downtown, and then we're going to end up at Face the Jury. It's a monument. It looks pretty neat. It was built on a courthouse lawn, and that's where they're going to be doing a lot of the skits and things they've put together. So let's go back to, if you have some time, let's go back to the Wheat Belly thing, because I really want to learn more about that. It and kind of ties into knowing what's in our food, absolutely ties into that, and I'm interested for, you know, my children's sakes. You know, Linda, she's got allergies really bad. Of course, I have five cats. That might be a problem. I had four, just got a kitten. And then Marina is, you know, she's going through the teenage years, and she's tired and grouchy and 16. So anything I can feeder that will make her less grouchy would be fabulous.
Well, and you know, I know moms especially are always looking for ways to encourage their kids to be their best health.
Right.
It's just ironic that this is an issue that not only results in, you know, impairing and damaging your family's health, but it is actually corporate crony driven. And here's an example. This is from the Wheat Belly cookbook. Products made from wheat flour are delicious, smell great, and make for all sorts of clever variations, from pita bread to wedding cake. But wheat flour is a delivery vehicle for all manner of compounds that exert undesirable effects on the human body, including new forms of gliadin, new and unexplored gluten in sequences, new forms of lectins, new alpha amylase inhibitor sequences, and many other new forms of proteins never before consumed by humans. And he goes on and says, Surely, regulatory agencies like the USDA or FDA scrutinize each new change, study the biological changes, the biochemical changes introduced, examine the evidence for safety for every genetic alteration, look at animal safety testing, and then ask for human safety data when necessary. Nope. No such thing. Geneticists create new strains of wheat with its collection of genetic changes. Agribusiness sells it. Farmers grow it. Bakers put it to use, and then you and your family eat it. Imagine one day the FDA announces that pharmaceutical manufacturers no longer need to file an FDA application to introduce new drugs. They can just develop and sell them, should they see fit. Pandemonium would result, of course, a scramble to introduce new drugs with uncertain side effects in the hopes of accelerating profits. Such a laissez-faire attitude, of course, would never be acceptable to the public, but that is precisely what has been going on in the agricultural genetics business. When you examine the health effects of the various pieces within modern wheat, you can't help but conclude it is a perfect poison. And one of the areas in this book that he discusses is how the grain producer business is our modern-day equivalent of what the big tobacco was 30, 40 years ago. You know, they've done the studies, they know it's harmful, they cover it up, and they produce their product. And it has addictive qualities, which they exploit because they're now producing everything with this addictive protein in it. And they put it in boxed cereal and you know, boxed pasta, and you just have to read everything in order to avoid these specific addictive components, but they put it in there on purpose so that you buy more. It is no different in its business premise than big tobacco 40 years ago. And, you know, and now, of course, we're finding out even more that they knew more, there were more memos, there were more studies than we ever knew, and it's certainly going to pan out the same way with big agra. In 40, 50 years, we're going to find out they knew all they needed to know. They should have removed it from the market. They should have done something to alert the consumer, and it's not being done, and it won't be done for a while because somebody is making too much money. So I'm not sure if we still have Karina on the line, but it looks like we do have somebody calling in. Let me go ahead and see if this is our guest we are waiting for. Hey, welcome to the Mom Patriot Blog Talk Radio Show.
Hi, Karina couldn't get through yet?
Well, I think she has dropped. Well, no, I see her on the line.
Yeah, she's there. We were both having trouble. My name is Amanda Carroll. I'm the local St. Petersburg organizer for the March Against Monsanto. And
Hi, Amanda. I had my phone on mute.
Okay, hi.
All right, well,
sorry about my delay, you guys.
Oh, no worries. Amanda's trying to, you know, be superwoman. I mean, you guys wouldn't believe everybody. You just deserve a great big pat on the back, and I should bring you breakfast in bed on Sunday because you've just done so much work. But and I know you have a really great team, too, so that's awesome. So what I want you, if you don't mind, I want you to talk some more about what – some of the skits that you're going to do, because they sound like a lot of fun, and I want people to know that this is going to be a family event. It'll be educational and a family event, and, you know, it's not going to be something that you're going to have to be concerned about, because these are just people that are, they care about labeling our food and, you know, basically providing the best food that we can for our families.
Yeah, basically, the reason I got involved is because, you know, I don't have a lot of money, as many of us don't, and we want to eat healthy. And we have become, you know, I hate to say it, but we've become almost like a science experiment for these companies to see what type of food they can feed us as cheaply as possible, and to hell with whether it's nutritional or not. You know, if it us fed and makes our tummies feel full, and, you know, it's marketed as having added vitamins and whole wheat and all this kind of stuff, then people think it's healthy and they make the mistake of buying it, and especially don't even get me started on, you know, diet sodas and fake sugar and all that. But the fact is that we need to be able to have labels on the food, and not labels set by the FDA, because they've been proven over and over again not to have our best interests at heart. You know, Michael Taylor, for example, but we can't let the FDA set the guidelines. What we have to do is take state initiative. And in Florida, we have HB1, which is the bill that is trying to introduce the labeling laws here. And in many other states, Washington especially is a battleground right now, Washington State, for state labeling bills. Because if we as a state can enforce the label laws before the FDA creates broad guidelines, then we can actually use the state law before. Because if the FDA makes the law, then it supersedes all state laws. And that actually leads into our next big thing is the TPP, which is the NAFTA agreement on steroids. And the TPP could actually undo all the labeling laws that we're working for. But at the very least, we have to, you know, make a stand for this and let make people aware. The biggest reason we're marching is to spread awareness about this cause.
Definitely. So you want to talk about some of what we have planned, or is that a super secret?
It's actually really great. What we're going to do is tomorrow, Saturday, October 12th, we're going to meet on the steps of City Hall, and we're going to have Ann P., who is amazing, sing a couple of songs, probably The Power of a Dream or something, an opening song. We're going to have a short little introduction, and then we have an amazing speaker. His name is Rob Watkins, and he was the guy who worked for the pilots on the planes that sprayed Agent Orange in the Vietnam War. And Rob has a great personal story. I got a copy of his speech, and it's just amazing. And then his actual email was even more amazing. I asked him to, you know, include some of the more personal stuff. But basically, Rob was the guy that when the plane went up in the air, he was the technician in the back. So every time the nozzles got clogged or something happened mechanically with the pesticide sprayers, he was the one to have to go back and unclog the nozzles. Which sounds funny,
wow.
But it's really not, because what happens when there's a pressurized nozzle that you undo, it sprays you in your face. So he was sprayed repeatedly over and over again by Agent Orange in his face. His vocal cords basically melted in his neck over time, and he's had many battles with cancer, and just many. His story is so powerful, and the fact that he is able to be a speaker at our event, you know, given that he had to have his vocal cords reconstructed and he only has one vocal cord that works. And he's going to be our main speaker. So that's the exciting part of the beginning of our event. And then from there, we're going to go across the street and give people a little bit of instruction on what we're about to do. We're going to have a little bit of street theater, a little play acting, illustrating, you know, the connection of our government and Monsanto. We're not going to name any names, but anybody who is up on this subject knows that many Monsanto executives are also now government officials, including, you know, Supreme Court justices and secretaries and of, you know, agriculture and many different positions. And that's a definite conflict of interest in my heart. So, so we are going to do a little skit about that and try to explain to the public what's happening. And then our main plan is to pass out as many flyers as we possibly can to our own marchers. And then we're going to use our power in numbers, not just to march and protest, but to flyer people along the way. We're going to try to, reach out to the community. We're going to march around high traffic areas and give them information on the TPP and information on HB1 and also just basic information on GMOs and things like that. So that's the plan for the day. And then when we come back, we're going to have a town hall forum that's open to any political candidate that's currently running in our district. And we do have two invitees, Jessica Ehrlich and Lucas Overby. And I do believe Lucas is coming, and I hope Jessica will come. Unfortunately, we do not have a Republican to invite at this time. So that'll be the last part of our day, and then we'll open it up to any Q&A and any silliness that people want to do. And we'll also have some art and stuff for the kids. So that's
awesome.
What we're doing tomorrow.
Sounds great. Something about the diet. Have you heard of that? And how that wheat has become, the way they've designed it, has become an addictive substance, and they're adding it into all our foods too.
I was actually telling my boyfriend about the wheat thing the other night, because he said, "Oh, it says whole wheat." I said, "Babe, I'm working to get the label fixed." Where did your wheat come from? But it's whole wheat. Yes, it's whole wheat. But but where did that wheat get, where, you know, who grew it? And that's what we're doing is people who want to eat good and care about what they're doing, but just don't know. They just don't know. About a year ago, I found out, and ever since then, I go horse usually the last 2 days before March.
Right.
That's why we're going to use our strength in numbers to pass out information this time. Rather than just protest, we're going to be a force for good and pass out the information.
Well, and what people need to understand, too, is when you're calling your representatives, they keep track of that. And what they do, I don't know, I got somebody dragging something into the cafe. I don't know if you can hear that. What they do is they keep track of how many people call, and they basically multiply that times 100. And people don't recognize that because they figure that if you're that determined to call, there's probably about, you know, around 100 people that are concerned about it but haven't made the call yet. So when someone says to me, well, I'm just one person, and what good will my call be to, you know, my senator or my representative or even the state house, really excited about HB1 and getting it co-sponsored and into committee and out of committee for debate. If we convince, you know, a few hundred people to call our local representatives, it's going to make a huge impact, and it could possibly pass. So,
yeah. When I had the honor of being on your show, Karina, with Representative Michelle, what is it, Rewinkle Vasalinda?
Yeah.
I thought so. It's a mouthful. When I had the pleasure of talking with her, she was basically saying the same thing. She goes, I remember she said almost verbatim, she goes, you guys just don't realize the power that you still have. When people call my office, the calls are the best thing. Emails are great, and, you know, they do. She said, if you're going to email, try to put something interesting in the subject line so it actually gets read, because they get lost, especially the form letters. She goes, if you're going to send, you know, a letter or if you're going to send an email, go ahead and call and let them know a personal story. Or if you do email, send them a personal story. Don't just send us a form thing.
Because
it actually does get read, and it does influence their decisions. And then I've heard from other people that and I don't know this to be true, but I've heard from other people that the secretaries and different people in the offices that are responsible for tracking these calls, emails, letters, whatever, they actually make a little tally of how many form letters they get, how many, you know, actual letters they get, how many heartwarming stories they get, and they give that to their, you know, and our representatives are busy. So anything we can do, even if it's a tally in the column that says heartwarming story, hey, you know what, that's going to sway them in our, you know, in the direction that we need to go. So it really is important. I posted a ton of stuff on my Facebook page and on our March page today, giving direct numbers for many of the contacts, too, so.
Yeah,
and I'm encouraging people.
For anybody that has an RSVP to the March Against Monsanto for St. Petersburg, I'm going to go ahead and put that event link up on the Adventures of the Mom Patriot Talk Show Facebook page so that they can see it. And please do RSVP because it'll potentially encourage maybe Jessica Ehrlich to show up because they really would like to see that kind of candidate town hall forum so that our voters can be empowered with the knowledge of who they might want to support with, because that's the best way to get to know a candidate is hearing them speak to you and getting to meet them in person. Is that's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, that I agree.
You know. All right. Well, I know you have to run because you've got some practicing to do.
I'm supposed to be there in just a few minutes.
Yeah, go ahead and I'm gonna bring Lisa back on if she has a few minutes in to finish up the wheat discussion that we were having. And thank you so much, Amanda, for everything you do. And I'll see you tomorrow in downtown St. Pete, if not
sooner.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, and thank you for going to Nature's Food Patch. I hope I get to see you there later on. Hopefully, I'll make it down. All right, you guys have a great night. I hope to see everybody tomorrow at the march.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, what a great event they're putting on.
Oh, she's just awesome. She's actually making, I got to tell you this, she went and got a black leotard and she's blowing up purple balloons and pinning them on it for grapes. They are so creative. Oh my gosh. And they got a couple of people that are going to be, they've got hazmat suits, so they're going to be dressed in hazmat suits, and they're going to run around while we're marching and spray the fruit. So, I mean, they're just so neat. And I, you know, with my back issue, I went down there to meet up with them and try to help them do some signs, and they were practicing their flash mob. And I'm sitting back there going, oh, I want to dance, but no, I can't dance. So it's so many creative people that are passionate about this issue. I'm blessed to have met them.
Oh,
we've got another 20 minutes to fill if you have time. I know you've got to run, too.
Well, no, not this minute. We do have time. It's just, I guess I was very shocked to experience when I was going through my experience with the wheat belly diet, how much of this poor health that I had experienced that so many people have and who engaged in getting rid of grains to solve their problems, that it was so common of an experience, and it all can be traced back to Big Agra. You know, whether you believe the GMO argument or not, it's almost irrelevant at this point. Either you accept that there's an issue with GMOs and it needs to be further investigated, or you believe that the government would never clear something that wasn't healthy. So I've come across those people, and some of whom are really intelligent, scientifically minded people who just trust the powers that be to make the right decisions. And I don't begrudge them their point of view at all, but what I'm concerned about is that there's information out there that is directly impacting people's lives. There are people who are discovering this information, and it's being quieted. Nobody is able to get the information out, or if they try,
they've been discredited for like 40 years. I've been researching it, and you know, there's been scientist after scientist going, hello, over here, and very relevant studies, and they have stories like you wouldn't believe, Lisa. I mean, they've just been discredited and made to go underground and lose their houses and everything. It's really scary, the power, and it all comes down to greed for me.
Absolutely. You know, when there is this kind of money at stake, it's just insane. I mean, it's not just the seeds and the development and the genetics that goes into it. One of the things that Dr. Davis points out is that, you know, all corn, soy, beets, and potatoes, all have been genetically modified. That means gene splicing technology has been used to insert or delete single genes. So wheat is not the only issue here. But, you know, one of the reasons is Roundup. Making Roundup ready corn and soy and genetically modifying it so it can be Roundup ready, engineering it to be resistant to the Roundup herbicide, that now those seeds and those crops dominate corn and soy fields on most farms today. So, you know, it's not just that there is an element in our food source that is unhealthy and we need to stay away from it. The issue is that unless something is done, and it's already happened, to the degree it's happened, it's disgusting, but unless something is done, these seeds are going to take over and fertilize the, you know, they sort of come pre-fertilized, you know, resistant to the pesticide and ready to go and sort of seeds on steroids. I think it's not a bad analogy here, but, you know, they grow powerfully. They yield huge crops because they are resistant to pests and they're resistant to the herbicide that kills other things too. So they're powerful.
But they're not sustainable though. They produce one crop and then they're gone. They did that on purpose.
Yes, they did, because they sell more seeds that way. If you can grow your own seeds, even if they're Frankenstein seeds or Franken seeds, then, you know, then it just sort of diminishes their bottom line. They don't like that. You know, and I certainly I'm a free market kind of girl. I appreciate companies have to watch their bottom line, but as a free market kind of girl, I'm big on choices. The problem
right.
with this and the way the this is the one area of advocacy that I have that I feel the government has not been involved enough. Well, of course they have been; they've just been bought. But my opinion, you know, the reason why we do need some kind of involvement, legal action, judicial action, something, is because it is taking over the seed market. There are farmers who have regular normal seeds on their soil, you plant their soil with regular normal seeds, and they can't keep their crop because if a seed blows over from a GMO crop, takes over, starts growing, the big agro will come in and sue that farmer and take all their seeds and their crop yield. It's a free market nightmare because they are becoming a forced monopoly. It's not that the consumers are saying we want them because they're terrific and we are choosing them over everybody else. Consumers have no choice because they're taking it at the seed level. They're becoming
right.
a monopoly at the seed level. We don't have a choice as consumers. We can support organic. We can support small local farms. That's about our only option at this point when it comes to these kind of issues, especially because they've taken over the corn and potatoes market, and that's a carbohydrate mainstay in a lot of diets and for families and for feed for animals. But, we have so little recourse now. We don't have freedom of choice. There's no freedom in the market. They've taken it over, and conservatives who are concerned about too much government intrusion, the one area where we need to allow government intrusion is an area that impacts the market unfairly, favoring one especially large corporation over all other farmers in the United States and of course, wherever they're allowed in the world. This is going on everywhere. But thankfully, they're not being allowed very many places anymore. But the fact that other nations have cottoned on to the fact that something needs to be done and ours hasn't, is really scary. And it demonstrates that when somebody coughs up enough money, anything can get done their way. And
right.
These big agros, they have huge, huge money. So it's a very scary proposition because we have so few choices left. Our only recourse, because there's so much money, is to petition our government to get involved. They're resistant because, of course, they're being bought and paid for. And I think the only thing that's going to impact at all are things like this march, which are going to demonstrate that there are certain things that no matter what our political, social, religious ideology, we are going to get together on, and we are going to be fierce. And that is protecting the future health of our progeny. When our children are impacted, when they are getting diseases in childhood that previously weren't seen until late adulthood, when there's an irresponsibility in terms of government and corporate cronyism, we've got to stand up. There's no other way. So anyway, I don't know if that's what you've been thinking about. I sure have.
Yeah, and somebody made a comment on my page last night before she unfriended me. She said, I can't do anything about politics. And what I really want people to understand is you don't have to solve all the problems. Pick an issue, pick a local issue, and learn about it, and then just go talk to your neighbors about it. If you don't like politicians, you don't need to deal with them. I want you to give them a call every once in a while and let them know you're there and let them know what you're passionate about. But nobody needs to be like what some of us are doing, 14, 20-hour a day. And I think sometimes when people see, and there's been so many precious leaders and volunteers that have just tried to take it on and they've burned out and they've gone underground. And I just want to encourage and hopefully inspire people to come back in and don't try to fix everything at once. Just pick a couple of things and just get out
and talk to your neighbors. With the garbage that's going on in our government right now, I'm 100% sure that people are ready to listen. And you don't have to go out there and talk politics to them. Find an issue like food labeling. And it may seem inconsequential to somebody, but for others, you know, food liberty is just a basic liberty that we all need to recognize.
Absolutely. We should be free to produce our own food. We should be free to milk our own cow and drink the milk. There are liberty issues at stake here that are far beyond GMOs, but are completely wrapped up in the same package of worry because it's the liberties are being taken away from the same group of people, the people who are being bought and paid for by Big Agra. So one thing I wanted to go ahead and finish up with when talking about Dr. William Davis's book is this section that talks about clear field wheat. It's fascinating, and I think it's enlightening as to how Big Agra has gone big business and used science as a development tool to expand its bottom line without any regard for human health. And here it is. Clearfield wheat is a strain of patented semi-dwarf wheat, the product of hybridization research at BASF, the world's largest chemical manufacturer. Hybridization is a loosely used term. The common usage, of course, hybridization, simply means mating two plants or animals to generate a unique offspring. Mate a red apple with a yellow apple, and you get a happy red-yellow hybrid. There is a presumption of safety with hybridization. The FDA doesn't come knocking at your door asking for your animal or human test data. Hybridize your heart to your heart's content, and you can just sell your unique vegetable or fruit. No questions asked. Clearfield wheat is resistant to the herbicide imazamox, also known as Beyond. Imazamox resistance is conferred by an alteration in the, I can't even pronounce this, gene. The promotional literature to farmers proudly proclaims that imazamox resistance in clearfield wheat is not the product of genetic modification. Clearfield wheat is non-GMO, unlike Roundup or corn and soy.
Wow.
Clearfield brand wheat is sold to farmers in the northwestern United States. Farmers in Colorado, Oregon, Idaho, Washington, and other states are now planting nearly 1 million acres of clearfield wheat. So how did chemical company BASF, with collaboration of Oregon State University, which holds the patent in clearfield and sells the seed, create this genetic variant? Clearfield wheat was created through a process called chemical mutagenesis. Developers exposed wheat seeds to the chemical sodium azide, NAN3. Sodium azide is highly toxic to animals, bacteria, and humans, with human indigestion of small quantities yielding effects similar to those of cyanide. With accidental indigestion, for instance, the CDC recommends not performing CPR on the victim, in effect just letting the victim die, since the CPR provider could be fatally exposed along with the victim. The CDC also advises not to dispose of any vomit into a sink since it can explode, and this has actually happened. In addition to methods of chemical mutagenesis, gamma and X-ray irradiation are also used on seeds and plant embryos to induce mutations. These methods of inducing purposeful, though unpredictable, mutations all fall under the umbrella of, quote, traditional breeding methods, unquote. So plants subjected to all manner of chemical and radiation-based hybridization techniques are unleashed on an unwitting public, all presumed to be safe for human consumption without safety testing in animals, just used to create your foods. There are some efforts made to analyze carbohydrate content, fiber content, and other crude measures of compositional change. Oh, you'll be happy to know that they also did test for its ability to yield cohesive cookies and light sponge cakes.
Oh,
so
nice.
What they're testing is almost at this point, because science is advanced enough, irrelevant to the safety. They're testing carbohydrate content, fiber content, and other things to list compositional change. And if it's too much change, then it can't be called a traditional breeding method. But when we are calling mutagenesis and radiation and gamma, we're calling that traditional breeding methods, there is something wrong with the entire system. It's not just, making sure Monsanto goes out of business. It's not just banging on a drum to get labeling in place. It's much more than that. We have to force our government, our scientific community, and our food agri community to take responsibility for what they do. And, it may mean, class action lawsuits all over the country. I'm not a big person on that, but in this case, people are sick. They're being exposed to toxins that in small quantities act like cyanide, and we're acting like that's okay. I'm not okay with that. I don't know any mom who would be.
No, I'm not. Not at all. Well, and something that Amanda mentioned, too, is the it's actually called the Warren, Senator Elizabeth Warren and Senator Mark Udall. They are pushing the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to finalize its 2001 guidance on voluntary GMO labeling. And what people, this is straight from the Organic Consumer Association, what people don't understand is that if the FDA finalizes that, it will supersede states' rights to I'm sure there will be a big battle on 10th Amendment grounds, but it will supersede state rights to demand food labeling because it's going to be a voluntary thing from the federal government. So it's coming at us from all different sides. And in this article, apparently, it fascinates me, these senators and congressmen, that they just don't understand the issue enough, and then they shoot off a letter and say, oh, this is going to look good because I want voluntary GMO labeling, and they don't understand the full ramifications that it will have on the state's rights to have required food labeling. And so, that's where we come in and educating our neighbors and educating
our representatives. I mean, just like Amanda said, they're very busy. And we thought if we get thousands of people that are passionate about the issue, then they'll listen. So.
Well, and that's the power of getting together like this, is that you can find the people who are passionate about it, and you don't have to go through this process of protecting your families alone. And there's
right.
something hugely encouraging about that, not just in getting information and passing the information back and forth, but moral support. Being encouraged that when things are happening, that that's significant, and to keep going and not give up. And, absolutely finding the alternative path that's going to get you to the goal that you need to reach in order to do something about all this. And that can only happen through collaborating with many people together, because it's going to take all of us coming together with our minds and our spirits and determination to get this done.
Well, and Henry Kissinger said it best. I mean, if you control the food supply, you control the people. I mean, look what's happening over in Egypt. They're hungry and broke, and they've got a system over there that's suppressing them. And Americans, unfortunately, are spoiled, and they don't understand the risks that we run by remaining unaware and unactive in our communities about our food supply.
Absolutely. And, the effect that this is having on the economy of small farmers, of mid-sized farmers, of local and organic producers is highly negative. And that's something that we need to take into consideration, because when our economy is at risk, or we are doing worse things to it than are already being done to it, that also creates a desperation which allows control to happen. Look at the Weimar Republic, if you want an
right.
example from real life.
Well, the lethargy and the unhealthiness and everything, it prevents people from having the energy and the brain power to rise up and demand our rights, too. I mean, I don't mean to sound like somebody that needs a tinfoil hat, but I just see it coming all the way around us, and the unhealthiness of our society is causing so many more issues. But thank you for jumping in, Lisa. I appreciate it, and I hope that you guys have a great evening, and I look forward to getting, I've met, last Saturday I met these great young ladies, and they're homeschooled, and they started a project, and they're knitting caps for cancer patients and babies and the homeschool family, and I'm going to try to get the girls on next Friday to talk about their project and how they're making a difference in their community at their age. It's going to be exciting.
That sounds terrific.
Okay. All right, everybody, have a great week, and don't forget, tomorrow is March Against Monsanto. Look it up, and there's marches worldwide, so if you aren't in St. Petersburg, please look up March Against Monsanto and find your local area and meet with your neighbors. Good night.
Thank you. Bye.